I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse Professor Martin Drum from Notre Dame University. Are you in Fremantle today, Martin?
Indeed, indeed. Last day at the office, and I'm off on some leave, Michael.
Well, should tell our listeners immediately you'll be away for the next three Fridays. And I hope you're getting away from all of this coming heat here and going somewhere cool, Martin. But
Yes, listeners will be very will have a lot of empathy and sympathy for me. I'm going to Italy. Tough job, but someone's got to do it.
Oh well, I've got an Italian problem for you today, Martin. But the first problem is President Trump. Not so much a problem. I have to admire the guy. His stamina. He doesn't seem to sleep, and he always seems to have a comment. No doubt he's got a staff coming up with Trump-like comments, but Truth Social is always firing. He has something nasty to say about his enemies and occasionally something nice to say about his friends and allies, or not so much his allies really. But he doesn't seem to have to bother, because of Truth Social, with sending out a random text message to anybody in the country who happened to have their mobile phones on, like Josh Wilson did in Fremantle recently. Martin, what do you make of the unsolicited text message that hits your phone?
I see that you put an article out about this, Michael, and it's important to explain to the public because these things irritate us a lot. They're very frustrating, and we can easily opt out of a lot of unsolicited messaging. But political parties have an exemption, and that means that they can get hold of us. They can send messages to our phone all the time. The chief offender appears to be Clive Palmer, who tries this on quite frequently. I don't think it actually helps him, by the way. I think it just irritates people. But there's some question about whether this is covered by the, this is more your area than mine, Michael, the implied right to political freedom, as per the 1992 High Court case. So I can't see it changing anytime soon.
No, I agree with you. It comes a part of the sort of the political landscape, campaigning landscape, and they don't wait until there's a campaign actually on either. They're out there all the time. You sort of have to get used to it. In 2022, there was something like 22 billion text messages sent in the US like this. I simply can't get over it. But I tell you what, the PM Anthony Albanese and Minister for Climate Change and Energy Chris Bowen perhaps should have been sending out unsolicited text messages to all of the leaders of the various countries who were turning up to COP30. We were hoping to get COP31 here in Adelaide. I talked about it with South Australian Premier Peter Malinauskas when I did a podcast with him a month or three back, and he confidently expected to get it at that point, and I think I did think the same, but it's failed. Has Australia fallen on their face, Martin? Have they got egg on their face? Have they tripped?
There's some, maybe it's a conspiracy theory, maybe it's not, Mark, but there's some chatter amongst around the place that Anthony Albanese was not disappointed to miss out on this. And so the theory goes is that this was pitched as a sort of Asia Pacific one, and the Pacific leaders, we know how passionate they are about climate change because it affects their day-to-day lives, that those pesky Pacific Islanders might shine a light on Australia's record on climate change whilst we're hosting COP31, and it might actually be an uncomfortable conference for us. So the chatter goes, but the one guy who would be very unhappy about this would be Peter Malinauskas, because he saw that as a major venture for Adelaide.
Well, I have to say, they're going to be holding it in Turkey or in Antalya, where I was for a few days back in April. Very pretty town. The Romans were there for a long time as well, right on the Mediterranean. I have to say, though, unless they're taking them out into the outskirts, it's an old-fashioned close town and won't be as easy to get around as Adelaide. But be that as it may, one thing Susan Lee is already doing, but she would have been doing even more so if COP31 had come here, is complaining about all the money that's being unwisely spent. Why are we spending money on these sort of environmental conferences when we should be looking after our citizens who are suffering under cost of living pressures? This sounds like what we'll hear from her a lot until she's replaced. Or will she not be replaced, Martin?
My crystal ball, would suggest that she will be replaced in the new year. And I think that certainly she's worked hard to placate the conservative, some of the conservative MPs in the party, but I don't think they will be placated. And I think the problem is she appears to be dragged along rather than leading these discussions. And as soon as your leader's not seen to be leading, I think your days are often numbered. And I wouldn't be that confident about her leadership continuing.
It's interesting, I don't know if it's related, but Mark Speakman, who'd been the Liberal Party leader in New South Wales, and by all accounts, a decent guy, he's just stood down and his colleague, Kelly Sloane, has taken over. He's endorsed her. But do you read any of the tea leaves in relation to that?
Well, this is the killing season, as it's known in politics, and there's some good reason why, because if you knock off a leader now, then the new leader, there's too much else going on going into Christmas. So you can draw a line under it. And the new leader's got all of January to strategize, get a few policies, get together ready to release after Australia Day, et cetera, can kind of reset with the new year. That's the theory. And it's playing out. So, you've got the Lay, but she's staying on, Speakman. But in Victorian, Liberals, Brett Batten, who's only been leader for a few months, has got knifed, and they've got a new leader as well. So it's definitely tends to happen around this time of the year.
Well, politics is everywhere, Martin. The first of the Ashes tests starts today at Optus Stadium in Perth, Australia, playing the old foe, the English team. And Steve Smith got all fired up when someone mentioned sandpaper and hopped into Monty Panesar. And boy, there's a little bit of politics in cricket, I suppose. It's in everything, Martin.
Well, if you happen to pick up the West Australian occasionally, Michael, you might just see the odd bit of parochialism where the Poms have been bashed most days. If it's not the front page, it's the back. So the war of words are always at the hottest, I believe, just before the first test. That's when the hype's at its greatest. And then, we settle down to business once it actually starts.
Well, I should say, slightly of a tangent, but not entirely. Keir Starmer perhaps should have flown over here to watch the test match. It might have increased or improved his standing with his constituents back in the old Dart. He looks like he's also a bit like Susan Lee on the way out.
He's copped it on a whole range of fronts. Probably the one single issue that he's been hammered on the most is immigration. And certainly the scale of immigration and the politics around it are on another whole level compared to Australia. Now, we know all about this. We've had our own asylum seeker debates. But when you've got a tiny strip called the Channel between you and Europe and people are pouring across that channel, then they really are in a conundrum, and they're looking at what to do, and they're trying all sorts of things, including shunting them off to Africa and other potential solutions, and none of them has managed to stick. And the latest one is that they're going to make them wait 20 years for citizenship. So they're all measures to convince the public that the government's taken this seriously, but I don't know that it's working, Michael.
Well, what does seem to be working, at least happening, slash working, is the AUKUS agreement between the US, UK, and Australia, where we are now maintaining and hoping someone will be sending Australian-made nuclear-powered submarines in the decades to come. But everyone's celebrating Rockingham, just south of Fremantle. As I say, they're maintaining Virginia-class US submarines at the moment. Lots of people are coming, it's said, building houses, wanting to improve everything for this new naval city, Martin. It seems that it's not only accelerating, but it's unstoppable.
Well, they are going to need new housing for tens of thousands of people as part of this project. And that's why Rockingham's right in the middle of this, because it will see an explosion of population, an explosion of investment. It will need to see an explosion of services that accompanies that to make this work. So I think that's probably why former Premier Mark McGowan was especially keen. And you look at some of the other MPs down that way. Roger Cook's not electorate's not too far away. Michael. Paul Papali is the Defence Industries Minister. His electorates in that area, broader region, I think they're all eyeing off the opportunities there.
Martin, with the test here, so many people try to get to it. The PM's going to be at it, and I'm sure Donald Trump would have been if he didn't have other things pressing on his mind. For example, he's about to meet Mayor-elect Mem Dani of New York City. So that would obviously keeping at home. What do you think they'll have to say to each other when they meet?
It's a that's a really curious one because Mamdani is has made a big campaign point of sort of differentiating himself from Trump and used Trump as a bit of a whipping boy. Trump's enjoying that. He loves a good sparring contest himself. Suits them both to give each other a whack. So I'm curious about what happens when they actually meet. But they're both a little bit populist in their own way. If you actually drill down to Mamdani's campaign, it's very much on cost of living and bread and butter issues and all of those sorts of things. So I don't know, maybe they can agree on something, Michael, or they might just agree to keep on having a crack at each other.
I suspect it'll be a photo opportunity for each of them. I have the strong impression that Trump just loves being out glad-handing, saying comments that appear to be off the cuff and sometimes are, to be seen with all sorts of foes as well as friends, taking things up to everybody. As I suggested earlier, he doesn't seem to sleep. He just has his adrenaline running. You think he'll do this meeting with Mamdani in the Oval Office and sort of throw a few barbed comments his way? Mamdani will be up to it, I reckon.
Well, this is the thing. I don't think he's going to be Zelensky. Zelensky knew he needed Trump, and I think he tried to fight back, but it was a bit, as a bully in the schoolyard. This one's a bit different. I think Mamdani sees just as much value out of the sparring as Trump, so they might use it as a photo opportunity. But if Trump starts going him and he starts getting a bit back, this could get very interesting.
I tell you what, if he hadn't signed, this is if Trump hadn't signed the bill that passed Congress to release the Epstein files after fighting against it for months, if he hadn't signed that bill, I reckon he would have been on the presidential jet straight to Optus to be right away from the Epstein papers and just tie himself up with something as important as the cricket. But he signed it. I mean, you reckon there's anything to fear? I have a feeling it's all going to turn into nothing much.
I suspect a range of people are going to be named. Look, there is, we're all in favour of transparency and whatnot. And I'm sure for the victims of Epstein, this is important. But what you're going to see here is a whole ton of names mentioned in passing without properly understanding, the truth or otherwise of claims made in an email or a statement here or there. It has potential to ensnare a whole range of people. It's going back a few years now. Trump himself, I doubt, is going to be impacted by this because if you think about all the outrageous thing Donald Trump has done, what could possibly hurt him that he hasn't before? We all know his comments before the 2016 election that he had to even apologize for them. But he said a lot of other crazy things. So, it's been water off a duck's back for him personally.
Well, I think you're right. He's from his dealings with women to things he's said, he's been caught on tape. We already know a lot about his dealings with Epstein. It's hard to believe there'd be something that would be a smoking gun from Trump's point of view. So probably had nothing much to lose and everything to gain politically by letting all of this go out. His people have been working on the side. You start to see the way the American administration does work. You've got Marco Rubio working hard at this, as well as Steve Witkoff, his envoy to Putin, dreaming up a plan to end the war in Ukraine, Russia-Ukraine. It depends how you look at it, but it looks good or it doesn't look good, Martin. What do we know as we sit here Friday morning Frio time?
So we don't know a lot, and nothing's been released publicly. The word is that Witkoff is making a is trying to iron out a deal directly with Putin behind the scenes that presumably present to Zelensky and others. But what we hear, through the grapevines is that, again, it involves conceding, Ukraine conceding a good deal of territory to Russia to end this war and to receive US security guarantees in return. That appears to be the sort of crux of the matter. That would be extremely difficult to sell to Ukrainian people. Zelensky, by the way, has copped a pretty significant corruption scandal amongst some of his close confidants. Well, they've been implicated in this. His standing's already taken a bit of a whack. Ukraine, it hasn't been disastrous, but they have lost some territory and been pushed back in a number of areas. This would be a pretty bitter pill to swallow. And indeed, I think that would be difficult to sell, given everything the Ukrainian people have been through. But clearly, some concessions are required to end this war, just the case of the scale. And I think, where do the European leaders fit in all of this?
Martin, I conducted, it's now up on the shipping news, and our listeners can listen to the podcast with the access they'll get through the weekly edition that comes out later today. But I interviewed Scott Ellis, who's one of the patriotic millionaires in the United States. They're a group, fascinating group, really, who have the mantra, tax the rich, pay the people, and spread the power. Do you reckon this sort of group could succeed or capture the imagination in Australia? Scott tells me that and he has an op-ed in the Time magazine. He wants to tax household wealth more than $30 million with a 50% tax. I mean, it's incredible, and yet he espouses the values of capitalism at the same time.
Well, I mean, there's two things. I mean, that's the you might describe that as social democracy or some form of that. That it's not unheard of for people to both espouse the ability of people to make money and then state that they should be taxed at a reasonable, fairly substantive rate beyond it. So it won't be the first in that respect. And it's not exactly the same as the platform of the New York mayor, but he's proposed certain things that are similar. Higher taxes, better services, more comprehensive health care, all these sorts of things. He had a fair bit of success in that, albeit a really localized election. And that's the Bernie Sanders approach, broadly speaking, as well, Michael. So there's been a movement for that in the US.
There is a danger sometimes, isn't there, when you're just reading Truth Social to not hear the other voices in a place like the USA?
I think there's a bit of an appetite in what we might call the populist left and populist right, because people are unhappy with the status quo. That doesn't mean they're the same, they're quite different. But that makes people receptive to left field answers to problems. And that's why something like that proposal could gain a bit of traction at the moment.
Martin, we're getting close to Christmas. The politicians more or less finished their business in Canberra, haven't they? Did they get anywhere?
The environment law, is one of those signature issues, Michael. That's still sitting there. That hasn't been passed by the Senate. I think that's probably the highest profile bill that's sitting there. We've talked about a few other things. I think Albanese is leaving Parliament aside and spending as much time as he can, whether it's on the international field or over here in Western Australia, spruiking AUKUS and, going the test and whatever else. So he's firmly in out and about in public land, and Lay's been doing the rounds on social on the regular media outlets to try and shore up her leadership. So I don't think either of them are that focused on what's going on in Parliament.
Well, Martin, it sounds to me in those circumstances that you're free to sort of pack up, lock the door at Notre Dame, head off to Optus Oval, perhaps catch a little bit of cricket, get on a plane, and head off to Italy. Well, that's very exciting. I did come across something that you need to watch out for, though. If you're thinking of taking any Australian-made spaghetti or sauces or the like with you into Italy. You don't need to, obviously, because they have their own, but you could also get into trouble. Italy's agricultural minister, Francesco Lollobrigida, not sure if he's related to the famous Gina Lollobrigida, has called for an immediate investigation after coming across what he claimed were jars of Italian-sounding pasta sauce on the shelves of the European Parliament supermarket. Outrageous, Martin. So just a warning.
Well, thank you. I always appreciate a tip. And if there's one thing, though, you can guarantee from me, I won't be bringing food into Italy. Now, the last thing I'd be thinking of. Taking food from Italy back home, yeah, sure. But yeah, well, can't wait for the pasta, the pizza, and the rest.
Oh, the wine.
The
Martin,
wine.
I'm sure all of the regular listeners on View from the Roundhouse wish you, as I do, a lovely family holiday in Italy, and we'll see you and hear you when you get back.
Looking forward to it.